kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Okay, still there?
What the shit was that? What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe, kicking off the show with me, Pernell Vaughn. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing okay, though I had one of those lame behind trade-in offers that can only happen when you are a game hoarder slash early adopter buyer type. I bought that Shantae game for the Switch, Half Genie Hero, and I'm like, well, the game retails for $40, and I bought the game originally when it first came out and never opened it. But that means I want it for the Switch, but I don't think I should buy it. That's a waste of money. And then I did, migraine mathematics in my head, and eventually came to be like, I never bought the DLC, and I have a Gamers Club membership, and the game trades in for $7 now.
I would have kept them because they're both different releases.
True, but not necessarily. They're different releases, but the Switch version has all the DLC on it that the other games didn't have. Mm-hmm. And it added like an extra costume in addition to that. So The DLC not on sale as of the $24. So as I've never bought the DLC, and after the trade-in and the Gamers Club unlocked, my price came to $23. So it was worth it. Yeah, I was like, I might as well just get it. And it comes with an art book, which the other thing didn't have. And the cover art looks nicer if you're into that sort of thing.
And the soundtrack disc.
Oh, the soundtrack was in the Risky Beats version, too. So that was already there. It was just the art book. But honestly, that soundtrack is swank, though. It is good stuff.
See, but now you have two copies of the soundtrack.
No, I'd never opened it. I actually just gave him the darn thing. I was like, here, take it. Whatever.
Really? I would have just fucking given him the game and kept everything else.
Well, at the time, I would have felt like a goober at the time, though. Admittedly, I should have just done that. But originally, I was like, maybe they'll just give me store credit for the full value of the game, which he almost did, because the guy that works there is awesome. But apparently, Best Buy doesn't even carry the game anymore. So they couldn't even bring it up for an actual price.
Damn.
I was like, yeah, damn, because they did it for me before. I took a game back. I can't remember why I did it. I think it was Overwatch, because I was like, I bought it with the intent to play with friends, and then it never happened because I don't want to play Overwatch, and two, my friends never let me know when they were going to play Overwatch, so it just stayed shrink-wrapped, and when I took the game back to the store like a year and a half later, they gave me full retail price for it.
That's pretty fucking cool that they did that so long afterwards.
I agree. I wasn't expecting it, but when he did, I was like, thank you, sir, because I didn't lie or nothing. I was like, I bought the game. I genuinely never played it because I bought it with the intent of playing with friends, and it never happened. I want to return it.
Yeah.
And the guy could have easily said, we can only take store credit for this, but he's like, let me see what I can do. Here you go. I was like, wow, you're awesome. Thank you for that. So, I mean, it probably helps that they have all my damn info, so it's not like I can actually, this guy shops here a lot. He's not flim-flamming anybody. Give it to him. The flimmiest of the flames.
The good thing is you had a good retail experience, where this past weekend I had a shitty retail experience, and this one was at GameStop, which shouldn't surprise anybody because GameStop is awful, but I went there, and apparently the district is having some kind of competition of like who could sell the most pre-owned merch, shit like that, and I'm friends with the manager at the store, so I wanted to try helping him out and pick up a used game. I checked my reward coupons. I had a bunch of extra points that I could buy $20 in reward coupons. So $20 off a pre-owned game makes a game a lot more palatable to pick up when you could save $20. Yeah. I start looking at the Switch games. Pretty much all of their good Switch games have gone up in price.
Oh, they jacked all the prices up to coincide with some of the bargains.
Yeah, even better. Like, how much do they usually charge for brand new games that are used? Like, something first week or first month. It's usually like $54.99, right?
Yeah, because I was going to say if it was $50, I'm used to it being like $44.99. That's what I remember back in the day the breakdown was. It wasn't a ton off, but it was something. So at that point, it's like, why the hell even bother?
Yeah.
And they'll probably be like, well, you see, it's not that bad. You can save money. But Do you get that weird? Don't you get a discount on top of that if you're a Power Up Rewards Pro member or some jazz?
Yeah, you save 20% on used games. But at that point, I would rather buy it new at GameStop and save 20% than buy it used at GameStop and save $1.
Well, that's where I'm at with when it comes to like GameStop. Like, I'm not one of the people that generally hates GameStop because I've had good experiences there. But when it comes down to the hard numbers, it's a miracle that they're still in business, because if you really lay it on the table, what do they genuinely provide anymore that someone else isn't doing better?
And swag, I'm not talking about and toys and collectibles.
Yeah, but those collectibles, a lot of them are just coming from ThinkGeek, aren't they?
Well, they own ThinkGeek. That's why.
That's what I mean. But like, they bought ThinkGeek, but before they bought ThinkGeek, ThinkGeek was ThinkGeek. Yeah. So even though they bought them, you can still say, I'm going to go to ThinkGeek.com and just grab these figurines and metal. But don't get me wrong, it's nice there's like an actual physical store to buy those things if you don't want to go on the internet. But when it comes to the hard and fast of being video games, because that's my primary reason for going to GameStop is to get a video game. It's very rare to get like a GameStop exclusive. Like Song of the Deep was a GameStop exclusive. I bought that from them. But it's very rare that they have exclusives anymore to constitute going to the store. And then when you think of any regular game, as long as it's not like too old, like for example, like I mentioned, Shantae doesn't get sold at Best Buy anymore. Shantae, ooh, sachet! They don't carry that at Best Buy anymore, so my best bet would be go to GameStop or the internet. So they would have that. But generally, any game that you're getting new, you'll get a better deal going to Best Buy, Jonesy Gamers Club Unlocked, which, let's be honest, if you buy games regularly, there's no reason not to have that damn thing.
Exactly. Then,
if you don't have Gamers Club Unlocked, then you're likely to eventually get a sale at Target, because Target still does sales, though they have been slouching in the earlier part of this year. But they still do sales. So eventually you'll get that. Or you get the credit card and just get 5% off every bloody thing. But in the end, it's like GameStop, if you go to the good one, they have cool staffers. Because I like the fact that some of the staff knows what they're talking about. When it's like, hey, tell me about this game. Well, I love games, so here's your information, buddy. I like that. But when it comes down to the money part, i.e. the most important part, they're not hanging. They can't hang anymore. They're not hanging.
Yeah, and that's what leads to the shitty thing that I ran into at the store, because the whole extra $2 on some Switch games isn't the big deal. I found a game I wanted to pick up, Summon Night 6 on the PS4, priced at $34.99, which, all right, you know, not too bad. It's a tough game to find. The Elite Pro price on there was $27.99. So you look at the price tag, it says Elite Pro price $27.99. I have $20 in reward certificates. How much is the game?
It should be the difference of the two. Should be pretty straightforward.
$11.99.
Where did all that come from?
Exactly. Apparently, what they do, store level, like even the manager at the store, when I was like, why the fuck is it coming up at this price? She's like, that's how the system is. I can't do anything about it. Like, there's nothing I could do about this. What they do is they don't take the $20 off of the Elite Pro price. They take it off the full price and then discount the game the Elite price.
What the hell is the point then?
I mean, I know it's only a $4 difference, but that's still some bullshit. That is some deceptive marketing. Like,
that's a damn combo meal. That is 40% of a $10 shop credit card. That's money. $4 is $4.
That's four copies of Madden right there.
That's four copies of Madden 2015. That's technically like 16 copies of Madden 2012.
But like, I even contacted corporate because I was pissed. I was annoyed. I think that is really, really deceptive and shady to do, because the price tag specifically says Elite Pro price $27.99. So as soon as that gets scanned in, the total price should be $27.99. That is your total. The end. Now apply coupons. $7.99.
You better take a page from the book of Toys R Us. Just look at that crap.
I know. So I contacted corporate, and the first thing they wanted, they were like, oh, what was the store address, including the store address? No lie. That's what they said. We want the store address, including the store address. I told them no, because I didn't want to throw my friends up there under the bus because they didn't do anything wrong. This is an issue with their computers. This is an issue with their system and their straight up corporate greed, which, let's face it, you know, $4 isn't a lot, but when that adds up to thousands of people a day.
And they bank on people saying it's just $4.
Exactly. But I didn't want to take that. So I rose a stink, and then they explained to me, it's like, oh, well, what we do is we take the $20 off of the original price. It's like, you're not supposed to do that. My original price is $27.99. Because yeah, that's what the price tag says. The price tag doesn't say save 20% with Elite. It says Elite Pro price $27.99. That is my price. End of story. Minus $20. I should have paid $7.99.
Yeah, if you're an Elite Pro, you get the Elite Pro price, and then you discount that. That's like saying, okay, you could be an Elite, if you pay for this Elite Pro membership, you get this price unless you got deals, and then you don't get that price, which is kind of deceptive. But yeah, hey, if I go to Best Buy right now with a coupon, you know what they're going to tell me? You get 20% off of Gamers Club Unlocked, and then you take this discount and you apply it to the new price. Because you know what? That's how that shit works.
Mm-hmm.
That's the incentive for being on a membership plan.
Yeah, when you have reward coupons at Best Buy, they don't take the reward coupons off of the full price of the game. They take it off your total, because coupons are supposed, you know, those reward certificates should be treated like cash.
Yeah.
And that's the incentive for
acquiring the damn things in the first place.
So yeah, GameStop could eat my balls. And when they asked me for the address, I told them to find their home office and use that address.
I don't know if I could do that, man. Yeah.
And the worst part of all of this is I have two things that I have pending pre-orders at GameStop that I don't know if I could get elsewhere. One is the Octopath Traveler Collector Edition.
Oh, that's right. I never ordered this. I was like, no, I'm vetoing collector's editions. What was the other thing?
The Shovel Knight Amiibo 3-pack, which I'm sure I could get that somewhere else, so I'll probably just cancel that, no problem. But then I want to get that Duke controller for the Xbox One, and that's a GameStop exclusive.
Ah.
Yeah.
At that point, sometimes... Wait, the potato controller is only available from GameStops?
Yep.
Well, that's not fair. I actually wanted that controller.
Yep.
Sons of bitches.
Yeah, which, pretty much.
State of Decay next week. Ooh, child.
This week, if you get the Ultimate Edition.
Oh, that's right. They did that bump up weekend in advance.
Yeah, and you like your gamer club at Best Buy. If you pre-order it at Best Buy, you get a Steelbook, too. Yeah, baby.
Really?
Yeah, baby.
Well, shit, I guess I had a pre-order thing. I was going to just walk in and say, give me my game.
It's like, it's fucking Steelbook week for me this week at Best Buy, because Dragon's Crown, I'm getting that at Best Buy in the launch edition as a Steelbook. I'm getting Black Panther with a Steelbook. Rick and Morty Season 3 with a Steelbook. State of Decay with a Steelbook. Actually, Dragon's Crown is just a metal pack. It's not a Steelbook, but close enough.
What's the difference?
The brand.
Okay. So I'm like, yeah. I don't know about a metal pack.
Steelbooks are higher quality, and they look better. Metal pack is like, it's like the off brand.
Oh, okay.
That makes more sense. It's like great family value tissues compared to Kleenex. Like, you don't want to fuck around with the, when it comes to blowing your nose, or like Charmin versus Scott toilet paper.
I'll stick to wiping my ass with Rick and Morty Season 3 as opposed to State of Decay. It's okay.
Pretty much, but you mentioned Shantae earlier, and that has music from a friend of ours, Jake Kaufman. There's another game coming out with music from a friend of ours, this one being Dale North.
What game is that?
That is the first game we're going to talk about tonight.
You and your segues!
Goddamn right, man.
By the way, that was a perfect segue.
So first game to talk about is called Wizard of Legend, developed by Contingent 99, published by Contingent 99 and Humble, released May 15th on Xbox One, PS4, Switch, and PC for $15.99. Wizard of Legend is a no-nonsense, action-packed take on wizardry that emphasizes precise movements and smart comboing of spells in a roguelike dungeon crawler that features over 100 unique spells and relics. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Well, let me just get this out of the way, even though you already kind of did. It is a roguelike, procedurally generated dungeon crawler. If you're not sick of those yet, listen on, because you got a good game in store for you. So, the idea behind this game is that you are a wizard undertaking the Chaos Trials. I have no idea why. I guess the goal is to become a Grand Wizard by completing them, but it is a very brutal trial. Because what it entails is you have to take out three wizard rulers or leaders, I'll go with, and you have to get through their domains, respective domains, and then take on them themselves. So how do you go about doing this? Well, you get a wizard spell book. A wizard spell book contains, or I shouldn't say spell book, more like, yeah, spell book. And there's like a master book that has every spell card that you can acquire, or master spell book page. And then there's the one you actually carry around in the game with you, which is more like a deck of cards. And there is the basic option, which is you only equip one of each of these. The basic option, which is like kind of like a close range melee attack, like you start with like a wind blade, and you can get others like a, my favorite has been like a lightning charge attack. There is the dash move, which is exactly as it sounds, moves that allow you to propel forward and dash. So you'll always have a dash move at some point. Then there are two other ones, which I'm not even sure what their classifications are, but one is like, I guess I'll call it like projectile. So it's like weird types of projectile attacks, like one where it's like, say, for example, just a red fireball that shoots out, and there'll be another one where it's like an icicle that shoots across the floor and then comes back to you like a boomerang. It's pretty awesome. Nice. Then there's the signature moves. Signature moves are normal moves that are kind of like projectiles, but there's a combo gaze that fills up underneath your hit points, and when it reaches a certain point, you use the awakened, I call it, the awakened version of that move. So, for example, the earlier mentioned giant fireball, when you hit full combo, the awakened form is three giant fireballs blasted in succession, boom, 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 and they hit like a freaking truck. It's beautiful. So you unlock these things by two methods. One is while you're in actual dungeons, you can spend gold that you acquire in the dungeon to find and purchase cards from shops that will show up on different floors. But unfortunately, when you die in a dungeon run, those cards do not come back with you. The other, more permanent way to keep them is before going into a dungeon, there's a sort of town hub zone that allows you to purchase artifacts that you can keep and cards that you can keep, but they're purchased with a different currency called Chaos Gems. They are harder to acquire than gold is. And unlike gold, they do not. Unlike gold, they actually come out with you when you die. So you'll be seeing a lot of different attacks in the dungeons, but you'll be slowly acquiring them permanently by buying them in the hub.
Oh, nice.
So it's like it's nice that you don't. I mean, obviously they want you to kind of work at the game harder, but you're not confined to wishing that you could just, you know, get everything by virtue of waiting out to unlock it with Chaos Gems. Also, every attack has a normal version and an enhanced version. The enhanced version can ultimately be purchased if you luck out and find it in the stores. So the downside to this is, of course, you might find yourself buying a cool spell that you like, and then like a couple turns like, oh crap, the enhanced version. Why did I miss out on that? This is stupid. You know, but at the same time, whatever. It's just money or gems. You'll get over it. But this is a lot of fun to deal with. I love mixing and matching the different weapons and, or sorry, not weapons, the different skills and the like. And you can also purchase new cloaks or cowls, whatever you want to call it. And each of those can come with different traits like bonus hit points or bonus defense or bonus damage done with water elemental attacks. Oh, and by the way, there's a lot of elemental attacks. There's fire type, water type, ice type, electric type, chaos type, and earth type. So
Pokemon, gonna catch them all.
Gonna burn her face. You'll be doing a lot of dying, though, because this game does not screw around. I started to get better as I played. Like, I felt like I was adjusting to it, but those first few runs, I was getting the crap smacked out of me. Usually, games like this, they'll kind of ramp up, slowly increasing the odds of enemy types that are coming after you. But in this game, the very first mob, you'll probably be fighting like four or five guys, and like projectiles are coming at you all over the place, and you have to dash like a madman to get out of the way. Like, they make you work from the start. But fortunately, combos with your skills comes fast and loose, so you can give just as well as you can get. Every attack has a cooldown, though, of course, and you have to pretty much be mindful of those cooldowns in order to properly balance out which attacks you want to use at a time. The unfortunate downsides to this, though. So, like I mentioned earlier, every attack has a cooldown. Unfortunately, unless there was a button I didn't press or something, which is very possible. These things happen. The cards do not display what these cooldowns are. At least I didn't see it. I just saw the attack and the element. So if there's a cooldown feature, I got to go back into the game and look it up. So don't hold me to that. I'm just saying I didn't see it. The other thing is that when you go to make purchases at the store for artifacts are essentially accessories that you can equip that give you different like buffs, like, I don't know, bonus attack damage for elemental type, or more gold dropped by opponents, or dashing farther, things like that. When you go to the store to buy it, it doesn't tell you what the artifact actually does. You have to actually put your money where your mouth is to actually learn what the effect of the item is, which could suck if you're in a dungeon run and you need something to turn the tide, but everything that's on the table is unfamiliar to you. Like, well, that Lance of Bloodlet seems pretty cool. And it's like, oh, that's a cursed item. You just lost half your health, but now your attacks do double damage. It's like, I could have used the health instead, thank you. But too late, you know. So I guess it kind of goes along well with the roguelike atmosphere. I mean, like, heck, if you played Sheer and the Wanderer, that game is way more brutal with that kind of stuff. So
oh,
I'm not
God, gonna, yeah.
But just something worth mentioning here. But as a whole, I had a great deal of fun playing this title. Like I said, the action is fast and loose. You got keeps you on your toes from every run, beginning to end. And the bosses, I've only beaten one of them. I've fought all three, but I've only beaten one of them. Kicked the tar out of them. They are hard. The battles are just displays of effects, particle effects all over the freaking place, to the point where the first time I fought the fire deity, I'll just call it, I was flabbergasted by how much crap was going on at one time. Like, fireballs getting shot across the screen, giant meteors getting dropped from the sky, with like a very small zone within a multi-scrolled room that you can stand in to be safe. It is crazy. They make you work. So don't go into this game expecting to take a nap, because you'll have tons of nightmares with that attitude. You want to come in ready to play and ready to break some knuckles, because that's the kind of game Wizard of Legend happens to be. But if you're ready for that, you are in for a treat. I can promise you that.
What I want to know is, how is the soundtrack?
It's actually really good. It ranges from sort of dungeony doom doom doo 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 doo, like dungeony tracks, to like pretty nice atmospheric level tunes. Like when you're in the ice area, there's a lot more soothing sounds. But when you're in the fire dungeon, if you end up in the fire environment, it's a lot more like heavy. Not saying rock heavy, but just like bass, like doo 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 doo. Though I think my favorite track has probably still been what is probably one of my favorite tutorials in a long time. You start the game out in a museum to Chaos Wizards, and you're a guy just dressed up like a wizard, and you walk through the museum, and the tutorial is walking through the exhibits, and it's like, hey, you can play with these cards and shoot these dummy targets with them. Press X to mess around with it. And all these kids are like, yay, this museum's great. And like, people are out on dates with their spouses, like, oh, my wife took me to the museum. We were curious about how the Chaos exhibit was going to be, how it's running, and blah, blah, blah. It's a really cool tutorial, and the music for that area is very nice and museum-esque. I like the OST. And of course, when you fight bosses, it's pulse pumping.
That is very, very good to hear that the soundtrack is good. So overall, $16 on this one. What is your verdict?
16 gets. It's worth it.
16 yeses.
Yeah. Well,
that's a lot of yeses.
Well, I was being funny. I only have one yes to give, but it's a very large one. It's a large yes for a quality game, worth your money. Buy it.
Well, you can't say you only have one yes to give, because you might have two more.
That is true. I only have one yes to give to this game. I got to conserve.
That's true. Very true. So, moving on, next game to talk about is called Super Chariot, developed by Freema Studios, published by Microids, released May 10th on the Switch for $19.99. Set out on an epic adventure and give his majesty the trip of his death. Guide a super chariot containing the remains of your king through a network of subterranean caverns. On your own or with a friend, lead the brave princess and her faithful fiancé through the catacombs in search of the ideal resting spot for the king. Purnell, tell us about this one.
This game is hysterical in a fun way. The premise of this game is as Joe described it. You're essentially carting a dead king who still can talk and is still a jerk to a resting place worthy of his regalness. And what ends up happening here is that you have to literally drag his carcass to the murky depths of subterranean caverns. This is done by affixing ropes to either the front or back of the chariot and pulling him along or pushing it from behind. This sounds like it's easy, and it is as far as the controls are concerned, but actual execution, that's where the work comes in, because this game can get pretty devious. So the idea is that every once in a while you might, like, say, get the chariot over a high ledge. How do you do that? Well, you have to jump up on the ledge, attach a rope to the chariot, and then pull the chariot up. Sometimes there's like a number of cool gimmicks in the levels that will require you to think outside the box a bit. Like one of the early ones, which I thought was pretty awesome, was I call them phantom rails, where if you rolled the chariot over the rails, the chariot would ride the rail, but you couldn't. So it would require you to like think outside the box. Okay, how am I going to pull this chariot? Because if I connect the rope to it, I'll go underneath a ledge that will get caught on the rope, so I can't pull him that way. I got to jump around, grab it from behind, and then pull him, or from the front, and then pull it up the ghost rail from a actual non-ghost ledge. There's some pretty cool stuff like that. And I did get the chance to play two players, which I was glad for. And I feel like this game excels the most out of the two-player mode because of the fact that it's kind of like how Ms. Explosion Man was and why I like that game so much. It requires you to cooperate with your teammate to figure out how to best get the cart across the various obstacles you'll come across. And while the game was designed to be played with one player if need be, there are a lot of sections in the game that are pretty much two-player dependent. And what I mean by that is, as you're rolling the king to his final resting place, you're also collecting money because even as a dead king, the man loves his bling bling. So as you're rolling along, you collect treasure by rolling the cart into the vicinity of the gleam, thereby concerning collecting. You can't just run over money and take it. The cart has to do it. So there will be sections where you cannot reach these specific fairly valuable gem items unless there's another player to help you manipulate the cart, because it's designed in a way that you cannot actually get it to that zone alone. And you will be doing a lot of communicating back and forth to figure, okay, if you go there and then swing this way and blah, 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 because some of the things you can do, like I remember one thing we had was where I grabbed the cart, pulled it up, then had the other guy grab the other side of the cart, and then he swung from the bottom of the cart to a ledge where he grabbed it and then pulled me off the ledge and then brung the cart back around to where he landed and pulled it up. Like, there are some crazy maneuvers that you can pull off in this game, but you can only do it in the two-player mode, so you'll want that access. Things that you can collect while you traverse the environments. There is a shop in the game, a shop that allows you to purchase upgrades for both the chariot and for your main characters. Main characters' upgrades come in the form of gadgets. You can equip the gadgets based on finding blueprints hidden throughout the levels that allow you to use and in the future upgrade them to do better things. For example, one gadget will be a super shield, which allows you to absorb damage from obstacles or enemies. Another one will be a peg, which is essentially a makeshift rope. You can kind of stick the peg in the ground, attach it to the chariot, and then pull it or push it or whatever you want to do. And then the chariot upgrades are just things that allow the chariot to function better. And these are like pretty general things. Like think like it can take more, it can hold off looters better, or it can, absorb, like pull in money from a farther distance, like magnetic chariot, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So you'll want to basically look for blueprints that are hidden throughout the levels, then take them back to the shop that's run by a communicative and very smile-worthy skeleton. He's an awesome guy. But you take it back to him and he unlocks the blueprints contents and allows you to make purchases. So, but I honestly was having a great time playing this game. Again, I do emphasize that I feel like the game is leaps and bounds better with a second player, but that does not mean the game is not playable alone, because I'll probably end up playing the majority of it alone just because that's how it is for me. But when I can get my friend Matt to hang out, we'll probably end up doing most of the co-op if we can. But I think the game is a lot of fun in and of right. It's got a lot of cool charm too. So,
It's an adorable game. I love Freema's games. It's such a cute style they have.
And the guy, whoever they got the voice, the king, I like his regal sarcasm or just that that dryness of it. Like, he talks, he speaks at different times in the game. And one of my favorite things that happened was when I was playing two players, I was the princess and my friend was the fiancé. And he scrolled off the screen a bit too far. And when that happens, unfortunately, the game will count him as a death. And you'll have to wait a few seconds for him to respawn. During that time, the king looks, he doesn't look because he's dead, but he says, "Are you sure he's the right man for you? Look how incompetent he is." And I wasn't expecting that, but when I heard it, I was in stitches. And obviously, that's not a spoiler for him. I was like, "Well, no, I won't be surprised." But no, he says other awesome things too, which I won't spoil for you. And he says them at different times that are humorous.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, this is an awesome game. Like, it was one that I was interested in back on the PS4 days. Never got a chance to play it, and I heard about Super Chariot. Like, oh man, this is something we need to review, because I've heard great things about the Chariot game, and then there's Super Chariot. I'm not sure why it's super, but that's because I never played the original.
I'm guessing it includes the DLC with it. That's my guess.
That'll do it. Yeah, but this game, it is quality. I think this game is pretty cool.
Well, now that you've had your time with it, $20 on it, what is your verdict?
I say at least a try it if you're single player, a definite buy if you're doing two players.
Works for me.
This is the kind of floppy game where it makes you communicate with your partner instead of just both of you running and gunning, and it's like, eh, whatever, we'll get there eventually. So to me, those are the preferred co-op games, ones where you have to actually have exchange words with your partner and actually coordinate activities.
No. Well, you got one more game to talk about. That's called Don't Die, Mr. Robot DX, developed by Infinite State Games, published by Digirati. It released May 3rd on the Switch for $8.99. Deep in the Electro Abyss lives a little robot who loves to eat exploding fruit. He also likes staying alive, and that's where you come in. Get the fruit, avoid the enemies, try not to die. Spoiler alert, you will die. Pernell, did you die?
Yes, I died. Yes, I died. I died a lot, and that's how the game is designed to be. How does this game work? So it is sort of like Robotron in the sense of, like, you're a small pixel man. Well, I guess they're actually pretty large images in this game. But you're one guy in a rectangular arena being hounded by a copious amount of murderous robot mabobs. They're all trying to kill you. And in each level, the goal will be different, but the scoring goal is different, but the premise is the same. Don't die. So the levels are broken up into arena worlds that are each composed of five stages. Each of those stages, you might have a different contest or a goal. Like, for example, one will say, just, let me see, do as many shave damage attack, take as much shaved points as you can. And obviously, shaving is, if you're familiar with games like Ikaruga or Cave Shooters, is to kind of rub up against enemies, but not quite close enough to die. Mm-hmm. You get points for that. But in the case of this requirement, they'll actually tell you to rub up against as many guys as you can and not die. Sometimes it's cool. You filthy man. Other times the goal will be to just get a high score, like a certain amount of points. Other times the goal will be to eat a specific number of a specific type of fruit, and then so on and so forth. And when you pick up fruit, it creates a small explosion, and any enemies caught within that explosion will die, which therefore can also buy you a little bit more breathing room and also score you some points. So that can help you in two different requirements or goals right there. As you do more of these levels, you unlock different trophies within the level. So bronze, silver, gold, and platinum based on your performance. And after you unlock a certain number of trophies, you unlock the next region. And that's how you progress through the game. Just getting more trophies to get to the next more and more frustrating level until you die, and then you keep trying, and then you die, and you will die a freaking lot. and that is the hamster wheel. This game, I wanted to dislike it because it doesn't look bad in execution, but you know the type. When you watch a trailer and you have no context, you might look at it and go, I'm not feeling this so much. This looks kind of cheap or not fun, or I don't know what's going on here. But when I actually got the chance to play it, I caught myself in the wheel of one more time, one more try. I'm going to get that damn platinum. I'm going to get this platinum.
Did you get the platinum?
I got a number of platinum trophies. I was addicted to a number of those stages, and I got fairly far, but the game is hard. There are unlockables in the game, but they're mostly cosmetic, I will say. Like, you get, like, different beanies and hats for Mr. Robot. I can't remember all the things per se, but I remember there was just cosmetic-y things. I was more concerned about just progressing the game. But you unlock the means to get these updates by, when you kill enemies in the game, they drop coins. You pick up the coins, they add to your bank, and you spend those at the in-game shop to buy upgrades. Like, again, like different colored robots with hats and the like. And just cool lip decks like that. But I will say it is a fun title. Like, it's short, it's sweet. Well, the game isn't short. There's a lot of levels. But, I mean, it's meant for short bursts of play. Pick up, play, get a high score, shut it down for the day, come back later, try again, drop it on the can. Hey, it's a Switch. You can do that. Play it on the can or play it in the car if you're the passenger, not the driver.
Thank you for clarifying, by the way.
Oh, I had to. I know some people are crazy out there. They want to play everything in the road because they think they're better than that. I mean, I won't lie. I'll admit to having a Pokemon run in standstill traffic here and there, too. No shame. But honestly, I think this game is honestly a fun time. I'm starting to really worry. I'm really worrying about myself here, though, because I feel like maybe we'll look for an intentionally bad game for me to review. I want to be able to come on here and say, do not buy this game. I have to do that sometime in the next month or two just to prove to myself that there are bad games in the world and I don't want to play them.
Well, for the $9 on this one, what do you think of it?
I think it's at least a try. It's a fun game. You just have to be, it's like, if you're interested in games like Smash TV, but you're more of a pacifist who only can hurt by proximity of, you know, fruit mines, it is a fun time. It's enjoyable. It is not a walk in the park, and it is frantic.
Good to hear. Well, Pernell, I am so sorry that we didn't have a bad game for you this week. But it is always good having you on here and chatting and allowing me to vent about GameStop. So do you have any final thoughts to sum up your games this week?
No, but I will say, let's pitch this to the listeners. If they are listening to this part of the episode and they're hearing a madman request bad games, and you just happen to know of one, by all means, let us know. Though, I will say, if any of you come out here with some nonsense like, well, you know what's a bad game? Gears of War 3, or some nonsense where it's like the game is clearly quality, you just happen to not like it because it's not your kind of game, I'm going to scoff at you. Because, well, I think we've had this chat in the past, Joe, but I feel like we've hit a hallmark era in life where there are so many games coming out, but also so many of which are good, that even if there are bad games, most people don't know what a bad game is anymore, because you don't even have to see them. Like, they don't cross most people's radar anymore because they get overshadowed by the sheer volume of adequate to good games.
Yeah.
Because remember, like, back in the day, you didn't have a ton of money. You didn't have a ton of time. You pretty much got access to what you could get access to. And the overall library of available titles wasn't that big. So you might get, like, maybe 5 new releases overall in a month to choose from. Whereas now it's like, how many? You get like 30 in a week.
Well, hey, do you want to know what a bad game is?
Sure.
Your face. Ah.
Oh, he's here all week, folks.
Right, moving on, next game to talk about is called Battle Chasers Night War, developed by Airship Syndicate, published by THQ Nordic, released May 15th on the Switch for $39.99. Battle Chasers Night War is an RPG inspired by the console genre greats, featuring deep dungeon diving, turn-based combat presented in classic JRPG format, and a rich story driven by exploration of the world. Checking this one out, Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm in a helicopter right now with a cat, just referring to the, yeah, there's probably some background noise, but hey, so if anyone's gotta listening, get done.
No one's knocking on your door. That's just the washer.
It would be kind of great though. I need somebody to just knock on my door like all day.
Someone listening is like, there's someone legitimately knocking on their door. It's an emergency. There's someone with a knife outside. So maybe you should go check on the door.
maybe you should, that other person should escalate the situation beyond just knocking politely on the door rapidly. Just
excuse
be like,
me. Excuse me, someone has a knife out here, please. Hello?
Excuse me. Hello?
Hello?
All right, anyway.
Hello?
Video games.
Hello? I'm being stabbed right now.
This is pretty bad. It's no longer me knocking. That's the sound of the knife hitting the door through my body.
This hurts really, really bad. There's a lot of blood out here. You might want to grab a mop. If you're coming out, just be careful. It's going to be a little slippery out here.
Oh, man. The polite murder victim.
Anyway, Battle Chasers.
What a sketch.
How is this one?
Well, it's not like being stabbed repeatedly with a knife, so that's good. Okay, so Battle Chasers Night War, which somebody was nice enough to point out to me that it sounds like the title was just made by an RPG name generator. And I couldn't disagree. But it turns out, when I looked into it a little bit, actually Battle Chasers is a comic book series that started in 1998 and is ongoing. I think they're almost at their 10th or 11th issue or something. So it's a very slow comic series.
Yeah.
It's one of those that I think had many delays and, you know, hiatuses and hiatus. Anyway, sure, that's it. And to be honest, like, that's kind of how this game's been so far. This is a meaty RPG. This is like a steak and three potatoes.
That's a lot of potatoes.
Yes. And if you're very hungry and you really, really like potatoes, then this is the perfect meal for you. If you're, like, on a diet or trying to eat on the go, this is just going to be, like, something you look at from afar and say, one day.
That is so, my life. Just staring at RPGs like, I miss you.
Oh, I know.
I miss free time.
Reaching out with my hand, just like... anyway,
one day.
So the story is basically there's a group of adventurers, I suppose. Don't go looking for like in-depth origin stories or character building. Apparently the comics for that. In this one, they're already in the middle of like a thing and they already all know each other and they get along remarkably well. So obviously all the conflict's been sort of dealt with already. However, in airshipping over this remote land, they are shot down by air pirates, and three of them become separated from the rest of the group. The group totaling, I think it was like five or six. It's been so long since I've seen the intro that I can't remember. I know there's an old-ass wizard and a sexy lady, and they're two of the ones we are meant to find one day. Cat is literally attacking my toes with his claws. This is terrible.
Better than being stabbed with a knife outside while we ignore you.
Yeah, barely. Hello? My cat's attacking me. Anyway, okay, so, but character development or not, this really isn't that kind of game. This is a dungeon crawler sort of JRPG that is super heavy on just about everything but the story. However, that is not going to stop you from falling in love with the characters. So the first thing I noticed about this game and what caught my eye initially is that all these characters are like really macho. Like, there's just muscles upon muscles on the guy with the sword, and he's got like that crew cut and a giant chin, and there's a 20-foot-high robot that is in your group. The scantily clad lady is very scantily clad. However, and then, like, you get to a town, and there's a dwarven blacksmith, and I swear to God, his beard looks like it works out. So, it's like, it's very comic booky in the sense that proportions are just, like, huge on these people. Except... that it's not, like, the actual writing isn't presented. It's, like, it's kind of macho, but also all the characters are really supportive and protective of each other, and they get along really well. Like, so it's not machismo, it's just really exaggerated-looking people. And in fact,
this is the same guy who designed the character models for the Darksiders game. So you could kind of see where that look is coming from.
For sure. Yeah. And you know, like, as opposed to what you might expect in such a story, like, your actual lead is a little girl. I think she's like 9 years old or something in the comic. I think she's probably slightly older by this point, but still, you know, a little girl with gigantic gloves. I guess it's her dad's magic gloves or something, and they're like half the size of her body.
Oh,
and
Lord.
It's kind of great, actually. And also, your 20-foot-high robot is a gentle soul and is the healer of your party. And like little birds like land on him whenever you're done with a battle. Like, that's how nice he is. Literally a Disney princess of a 20-foot-high robot.
So the Iron Giant.
Essentially, yes, except he looks cooler. he's my favorite. Calibretto is my favorite. I've even been like looking at fan art and stuff of him, and he has fans. I knew he would. So you get into this adventure, and the thing about it, the real meat of it, is that just there's so much. Like, for one, you don't gain levels very quickly, and you don't get money very quickly. You really have to grind for just about everything in this game. And the battles are not speedy affairs. Like, you got all these punch animations and, like, you know, all this planning and stuff to do. Essentially, the way a battle goes is that you use your regular attack to build up what's called overdrive. And so the way overdrive works is it's like your mana in that you can cast spells with it, but it's temporary. It only lasts till the end of the battle. But if you build up your overdrive, you can cast your most powerful stuff without actually diminishing your magic, which is really nice because, again, stuff is expensive and hard to come by. So, like, mana potions, you don't just stock up, like, 99 of them, you know, before the next dungeon. It's like, I mean, you could, but it would take you forever. So using the overdrive system, and that's really cool, and you unlock more and more as you gain levels. Like, every level you're unlocking new stuff, because the levels come very slowly. To give you an example, now, of course, I'm a person who relishes grinding, and so, you know, don't use this as the prototypical example, but I have been playing this game for 122 hours,
Jeez,
and I'm in level 10.
Holy
so
shit.
That gives you an idea of how much there is to do in this game that's not just straight up leveling up and gaining money.
That also gives me an idea of the quality, considering that you're still playing it 100-plus hours in.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be playing this for like 500 more hours. It's great. So the dungeons, the way they're set up, is it's a little bit like Diablo. You know, you go in and you go from room to room, destroying roomfuls of enemies, clearing puzzles. Sometimes there's a random element. They'll randomly throw in things. Like, there's a chest that if you put something into it and then find the chest somewhere else in the dungeon, that item will become improved. And so that's really cool. And you can even use, like, unique weapons and stuff. But then, of course, you have to go that long without your weapon. And there's just all kinds of stuff like that. And then you get to the boss. And the boss music is really cool. I really, really love it. The soundtrack to this is also very beefy and meaty. It's more orchestral and ambient than anything. But one of the composers is Jesper Kidd, who is a legendary composer from the Genesis era.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I don't remember the name of the other person, but they're both very good. This whole soundtrack is worth a listen, and thankfully it's really available because this game's been out for a while on other systems.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get through the dungeon, you have the option of going back into the dungeon and raising the difficulty. And the game's nice enough to tell you before you do this how difficult the dungeon is going to be on a higher difficulty. So it'll say, like, you play it on normal mode, that's very easy. And then let's say you leveled up a little bit, so you go back in, you're like, you want to play it on hard mode, it might say, well, for you, this will be easy. And then you can go in and play it on legendary mode, and it might be, okay, this will be hard for you. But as you gain more power, then those ratings will drop down. So it'll be legendary, but also very easy.
That's cool.
So I like that it's very forward about that. And then, of course, the treasure and the enemies and the experience and gold and all that other stuff that you can get go up as the dungeon rating goes up. And you can go in and try the legendary version, you know, initially. The worst thing that will happen is that if you get killed, then you just lose a little bit of money. Because there's no, like, the only way to save the game is to save and quit. Mm. So it basically leans on its autosave. If you die, then you just run away and you lost a little bit of gold or something like that. It's a game that's meant to be like, don't worry about saving all the time. Except in legendary mode, if you die, then you have to restart that dungeon all over again. So there's a little bit of risk there. So I basically went through the dungeon several times, and every time you can pick up artifacts, which are unique items that you can trade in with a guy in the town for coins that you can only get by trading in artifacts or by trading in fish with a fishmonger that you unlock later. So fish are artifacts, and then you can earn items that are way more powerful, like Diablo style, like uniquely powerful items. And oh man, the guy restocks all the time, and you just want to go in and get all of them. The first thing I got was a sword for the sword guy, and it enhances the amount of treasure you get after a battle, and it's called the Booty Blade. So that's pretty amazing.
The great name.
Oh yeah. So I mean, that the music's great. The art style is really lush. Like I said, the characters are a little exaggerated, but you really get into it, like in terms of anything else, because it's not one of those like kind of early God of War games where it's like everybody looks proportionately like muscular, but they also act macho and like really dumb, you know. They're all actually nuanced characters with just that comic booky art style. So yeah.
Cool. So overall, $40 on this one. It is a little bit more than the other platforms because obviously the Switch tax, it just, it's a thing.
Well,
now.
Also there's a physical release.
Yeah, exactly. The Switch tax physical cartridges.
Yeah, exactly. No, $39.99. I was planning on buying this anyway before you got it and asked me to play it. So that actually lined up perfectly.
You're welcome.
Yay. Look, $39 is on the cheap side for a fully fledged Switch RPG, and this one is worthy. I mean, I would say go ahead and pick up the physical version, because I personally like to collect physical versions of games, but, I mean, even as a $39.99 download, I mean, at least it's there for you.
Very true.
And if you're like me and you're going to spend 122, you know, hours over a couple of weeks, like, grinding up everything, then maybe do download this and just have it on hand.
There you go. That way it's always there. You don't have to worry about, oh, do I have the cartridge with me? It's just always there, ready to be ground.
Ground. Oh, and there's, by the way, I mentioned fish. There's fishing holes in every dungeon, and they restock. Yeah, and you can buy new fishing poles. God, this game is so good. All the good games have fishing mini games.
I think you're convincing me to finally fire this one up, because I've been sitting on the Xbox version for a while, and just knowing how much of a time sink it is, I just keep looking at, like, I need to play this. I need to play this.
I think it'll be great, and honestly, you can play it a little faster, although my roommate has actually played almost all the way through the Steam version, and he says towards the end it gets really grindy, so...
Well, I like the grind, so...
Me too! I'm a Dragon Quest fan. Bring me the grind. I love it. Like they said, the battles are fun. They're fun, and they require strategy and paying attention, and enemies get really dangerous, so it's kind of like... It's no big deal. Do it.
Well, jumping from $40 to $4, the next game to talk about is called RP Golf, or RPG Golf, developed by Arctic Net, published by Chorus Worldwide Games Limited, released May 9th on Steam for $3.99. Once upon a time, the kingdom was a land of peace, harmony, and an all-consuming passion for the greatest sport, golf. Everyone in the land played day and night, and soon the kingdom itself was turned into the most beautiful course the world had ever seen. The land was happy, the land was good, until the monsters came. Chris, tell us about this one.
Oh boy. I feel like this is going to be, if this game were more famous, it would be one of those situations where it's like, is it RP Golf or RP Jolf?
Ripa Golf.
role-playing Jolf. It's role-playing Jolf. Well, okay.
Tell us about Jolf.
Well, for one-tenth of the price, you definitely get one-tenth of the intensity. this is among the lightest RPGs that I've ever played, and among the lightest golf games. So what you are buying is essentially two of the most intense genres in gaming, in terms of, like, at least from what I've played, but in basically a casual game. So yes, you play as this lady. I keep forgetting her name because it's in the menu and no one else ever uses it. Leanne, I think, is her name. Anyway, so you start the game, and yeah, the kingdom's been taken over by monsters. Nobody can golf because of the monsters, so she takes it upon herself to go out and defeat the monsters and play all the golf. Essentially, the game is leading up to, I think you have to play through 18 holes is what it is, and there's a dungeon in between every hole. So you play a hole and then do a dungeon, and the cool thing about it is that basically when you play the golf portion, which, by the way, is one of the only golf games I've ever played, which is entirely top-down. It doesn't actually put the camera behind the ball like in every golf game since, you know, golf on the NES. It's just overhead, but you still do the same mechanics of aiming and stuff like that. If you've played Mario Golf, then you've played this. But the thing about it is
the description says just 9 holes of golf, ready to be discovered across the world map.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I'm a third of the way through the game already.
I guess 9 holes for 9 dungeons, maybe?
But that's the thing, is that, like, it does go pretty quickly. If you're pretty on your golf game, that is to say your timing presses and all this other stuff, because the game forces you, because you have to face against apparently a red dragon who is judging your golf game before you get to him, for, I suppose, the ultimate showdown. You have to get a par at least on the holes before you can move on. So you actually do have to play the golf game. and then, of course, the RPG part, you actually do have to play the RPG for a couple of reasons. One, of course, is to advance into the next area. You get magic spells that, like a Metroidvania or an RPG, they let you get to the next area. So it's kind of open world, but you'll eventually run into some obstacle that you have to beat a dungeon to get past. For instance, ice blocks, and then the first dungeon you get a fireball, that sort of thing. The way that you fight enemies is very Zelda-like. I would say either Zelda or like an early SNES, like Lagoon or something, where they just run around and they broadcast their attacks, which is nice. Like, the enemy will flash and then it'll like hit you, and if you hit the button at the same time, then it'll block the move, which is cool. And you can also do a powered up like golf swing, but yeah, it's all live action type stuff. So it's not proper like JRPG stuff. It's more like Zelda golf.
Gotcha.
Which is fine. But the thing is,
it looks cute as hell.
Oh, it is. It is very cute. Actually, I really like the graphics in it, and the music is really catchy too. It's more on the golf side than it is on the RPG side, but at the very least, it's like when you're in dungeons and stuff, it sounds like a dungeon. And the boss music is really cool too. Nice. Anyway, so yeah, you fight these enemies. Now the thing is, there's no easy way to heal damage that is done to you in the game apart from, you can purchase drinks, usually close to save points, that, you know, you buy them and none of them will fill up all your life, so you just have to keep buying them. And you get pretty good drops from the enemies and stuff, but there is, you know, you can get yourself caught in not having enough money to heal yourself, and then you've got low life and you're trying to go after these enemies. However, if you level up, then your life does go all the way up. But I found myself sort of, until I could afford to just buy stacks of potions, which you can also keep on you, I was just like, man, I really wish there was an inn or something, because there's nothing. It's just, they just got random, you know, save spots interspersed throughout the whole place, and then, you know, treasure chests that eventually, or that occasionally have stuff in them.
Yeah.
Of course, now it has two different maps where you can use this. You have where you can see where you're going. You have a map that shows you all the holes, in the general world map, and then you push the button again, and it actually gives you the bird's eye view of the entire square that you're on, and you can actually just move the camera around and actually see where you're going, which is pretty handy for a part later in the game when there's a giant-ass maze that you have to get through.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, at least you can look the whole thing over and, you know, kind of figure out where to go instead of just getting lost. But I was like, man, it's actually an intimidating size maze. So, yeah, it's just like, it's one of those things. It definitely will keep you interested for a long time. It's probably not, it's not really in-depth enough as an RPG or as a golf game to be like, you know, a total winner, but I mean, for $4, it's this game will easily give you like days worth of entertainment.
Nice. So your official verdict for $4 on this one?
For $4, it's a fuck it, why not? But I personally had a lot of fun with it, so I would have gladly spent $4 on it.
I might have to, because it looks really, really cute, and I, what was, what, a golf story on the Switch I really enjoyed?
Yeah, yeah, it's, so. Yeah, from what I can see, it just doesn't have as much as Golf Story, but I mean, for the price,
you know. What I'm saying. I enjoyed Golf Story, so why not grab this one as well, considering, what the fuck, it's only $4. I got that in my Steam account. Why not?
Exactly. This one is definitely a good use of $4 in your Steam account, so it's fun, it's cute, it'll keep you entertained. It won't, like, you know, I don't think it'll be your, like, you know, anybody's top of the list or anything, but hey, that's a $4 Steam game for you.
Indeed. Oh man, well Chris, always good chatting games with you. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
I think somebody needs me at the door.
Moving on, next game to talk about is called Inksplosion, developed by Petite Games, published by Rattleika Games, released May 9th on Xbox One, PS4, Vita, and Steam for $4.99. Why should war be hell when it could be fun? Enter Inksplosion, a single-screen twin-stick shooter where the only real enemy is beating your previous high score. Checking this one out, Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I mean, I'm now speaking to you on my iPhone 8, so hooray.
Ooh.
You know, no longer fearing of, you know, my battery exploding next to my head.
Which is, so, you know, I guess a positive. Yeah, we'll go with a positive.
Probably.
We'll go with
I mean, a, sure. I could have probably had a good lawsuit against Apple, you know.
I doubt it.
Might have also been dead, but, you know.
If only.
You have to weigh out the positive. I was going to say, you have to weigh out the positives and the negatives, really.
So tell me, what is Inksplosion?
So it's, first off, that thing's a lie about how the only enemy is your high score. No, no, that's completely a lie.
The enemies are your enemy.
But the enemies of my enemy, doesn't that make them my friend?
Maybe.
No.
You tell me. You're doing really, a fucking review. Come on. Chop. All right.
Jeez. Okay. So anyway, so yeah, it's as you said, it's a twin stick shooter. use the left stick to move around, right stick to aim, and you have the ability to slow down time to kind of like a bullet time kind of thing going. But at the same time, it does take away part of your health as you're doing it. And you, of course, you can also shoot. Now, every single level, you've got these different obstacle walls, which I think kill you if you touch them. I'm not entirely sure because I suck really badly at this game, so I couldn't ever, I couldn't really tell if I was dying because I got shot or if I had touched the wall. So I'm not entirely sure about that.
They damage you, but they don't kill you.
Okay. Well, yeah, but what if I'm like really low on health?
Well, then, yeah, then yes, they could kill you, obviously, but they're not instant death.
Okay, right. So, and then like you get four enemies that pop out, and your weapons are randomized every single level. You've got like a shotgun kind of level, which I thought was the most useful. You have a pushback gun, which pushes them back away from you. Along with doing damage, a laser beam, which is just, it's a laser beam, and also a missile thing, which I thought was like the absolutely the least helpful. It did the most damage, but it moves slow as molasses. So you'd have to figure out how you're going to be able to quickly move around the map, which of course, again, is randomized with each one, and you just keep trying to get. You just keep trying to beat your high score from the previous time. And that's pretty much, that's all that there is to the game. There's two other modes to it, but I couldn't unlock them because my scores weren't high enough.
Okay, so arena mode, once you hit 100,000 in normal mode, you unlock arena mode, which is basically the same game as before, but without the walls that pop up. So it's just one set arena. Enemies will pop up. You kill them. Enemies will pop up. You kill them four at a time, like usual. You just don't have to contend with the walls. And then there's a hard mode, which is just the enemies do a lot more damage and they take more hits to kill.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one day, hopefully I'll be able to see that. If not, if anything, I'll just, you know, come over to your house and request help. You know, and have you get the achievements for me. Because that's the other thing. Joe was like, oh, yeah, you know, you could definitely get like 1,000 out of 1,000 in like 20 minutes. And so 20 minutes have passed by and I'm like, I think my high score is 39,000 and I've got like 200 gamer score. And it's my games are pitiful. Like I could barely scratch like 8,000 a game.
Good Lord. Yeah, the big thing is that you need to not get hit. Every enemy you kill raises your combo, your multiplier, I guess, and
it also gives you a little bit of health, too.
Yeah. Yeah, every enemy you kill does give you health, so if you do take a couple of hits, it's not necessarily the end of the world, because you can recover. The big thing is
making... If you take three, though.
Well, unless you kill enemies and get your health back.
Well, you know, we're talking about Jacob Gardner.
Yeah, so you lose fairly quickly. But yeah, I think this game is going to be a fairly popular one amongst achievement hunters and trophy hunters. What I really enjoyed with this is I had fun with the game to the point where I ended up buying it on PS4 so I could play through it again and just get a bunch of easy trophies with it. I was shocked that a $5 game had a platinum trophy with it. I thought games needed to be more expensive to have a platinum in it. But even better is the fact that this is a cross-buy game, so you get it on PS4 and on Vita, and each one has their own separate trophy list. So for a $5 price, you can get two platinum trophies, which again, to a PlayStation gamer, that's a fairly impressive deal that you could get two platinums for $5.
That's pretty sweet.
It is.
Now, are any of the achievements rare on Xbox or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you don't get to hear it. You don't even get the benefit of that wonderful sound.
Nope, not at all. Even on PlayStation, I think the platinum trophy was like 73% of people had it. So this is not a difficult game to get all the achievements and trophies on.
Unless you're me.
Very true. If you're halfway decent at twin stick shooters, you should be okay for the most part. But yeah, there really isn't too much to say about the game. I think it's cute. I like the ink splatters when you shoot and kill enemies. There's really not too much to say about it. It's a fairly simple, straightforward game.
I like the ink splatters, but at the same time, I found them to be a tad distracting.
You're distracting.
At different points, but I think that's fair. I mean, my ample bosoms, you know, I know they're very distracting to you. The other thing I was going to say is like the weapon randomization with each level. I really felt it made each game like a hit or a miss. And it's just like, cause the game where I was doing 39,000, I kept getting the pushback gun and the shotgun, and I was doing really well with those. And then any other game, it's just like, if I get stuck with the missile launcher right off the bat, it's like, I'm just done. Like, I'm not going to recover on that game.
Yeah. Shotgun is definitely OP. I hated the laser.
I didn't like it either. Like as long as I had either pushback or shotgun, I was fine. But once like I get a new level and a new weapon, it's like, forget it. I don't know. Like I thought it was an okay game. I mean, I definitely suck at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I like, you know, for what it is, I like it. And for the $5 price tag, you know, I think that's pretty good.
So your official verdict at $5?
You know, fuck it, buy it.
Sounds good. I agree. If you do have both consoles and you do just want to pick it on one or the other, I would honestly probably go with PlayStation to get that double trophy list. Good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me.
All right, so next game to talk about is called Super Hydora. It'll be out May 17th on iOS by AB Light Productions for $7.99. Super Hydora is a non-linear horizontal shoot-em-up designed to offer a challenging and memorable experience. The game has direct action, nostalgic art, and a wide variety of unique content and situations. Jacob, tell us about this one.
Super Hydora is pretty much like an R-type because Raiden's top down. Gradius, yeah. However you pronounce it. It's like one of those type of games. Also, it reminded me of a bit of like Abadox from the old Nintendo, which is like a huge throwback.
I would have never expected you to know that game.
Why? I used to play it all the time.
I don't know. Just you don't come across as the guy who's played NES. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I used to play quite a bit. Okay. Anyway. Now I've lost what I was going to say. Oh, so you're flying around in your spaceship, and you're able to choose like where you're going to go on the map, kind of like Star Fox games. Mm-hmm. And so each one has like its own feel to it. Like, you know, you got one that's kind of like a space station level. You have another one that's like on a planet with like colonists evacuating as like everything's going to shit. And you can choose what your weapons are going to be because they unlock as you go through the game and you pick up stuff. And so each time that you go through a planet again, you can choose out what your loadout's going to be. So you can try new tactics with how you're going to blast your enemies to smithereens. It's a totally solid game. Like the graphics are absolutely beautiful. The music and sound were fantastic. I really loved it. The controls were okay.
I know we covered the game previously on a couple of platforms, so I'm curious how it translates to iOS.
It translates pretty well. Like you use one finger to move around, one finger to blast stuff.
So are you telling me that you finger blast in the game?
I finger blast all the time. You know, I mean, sometimes even when I'm not playing Super Hydora, you know, there's a whole lot of finger blasting going on.
We have problems. I
hate you so much. So you use your one finger to move around the spaceship, and that was okay. But of course, if you've got sausage fingers like me, playing on the iPhone, it's not exactly the best thing, because you are going to cover up part of the screen, which can prevent you from seeing some of the enemies. So that was a little bit of a negative. However, right before, you know, we started up the show, I quickly popped it into the Game Vice, which, you know, I reviewed many episodes ago, the handheld extension for the iPhone, which makes it act like a game controller. And Super Hydora is actually, format is not the word I want to use, but it works with the Game Vice. Compatible. There we go. Thank you.
Words are hard.
You know, I'm putting my English major to good use. So it is compatible with the Game Vice, which is a very nice bonus. It makes the game heck of a lot easier to do. So, if you were smart enough to pick up the Game Vice or get one, cause you know, you had to review it for, you know, a certain podcast, you know, I highly recommend popping it in and playing Super Hydora that way. Cool. And either way, it's an absolute blast. I highly recommend it. I think it's $6.
$8, $7.99. $7.99. Like, do you pay attention when I talk, when I do the intros?
No.
You ho.
Why would I pay attention to you?
So you could get the information right.
Nothing important.
But yeah, for $7.99, what is your verdict on Super Hydora on iOS?
It's, to be honest, that $7.99 is a little pricey, but honestly, if you're a big fan of this genre of traditional shoot 'em ups like this, it's definitely worth your investment. If you have a Game Vice, absolutely, it's a must buy immediately. Either way, I highly recommend the game. It's just definitely more so if you have the Game Vice to play it on.
Awesome. Sounds good. Jacob, it is always tolerable having you on the show chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it all up?
I'm looking forward to, I think the next podcast I'm going to be on, cause I know I've got Boss 101 and that other one that you just gave me to do. So looking forward to those.
You're terrible at this.
Yeah, no.
All right, next game to talk about is called Son of a Witch, developed and published by Bigasar. It released out of Early Access May 16th for $19.99. Action roguelike for 1 to 4 players with cute graphics, easy to pick up controls, and deep game mechanics. Combine dozens of different weapons, magic items, potions, and spells with unique effects to beat 7 enemy factions and 24 bosses. Can you find the ancient goblin artifact at the end of the dungeon? Checking out said dungeon, Royal Sefton, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm a son of a witch.
Oh, are you?
No, I'm not actually. But I like witches.
So what is this game?
Yeah, when I first took a look at it, I was thinking, ooh, Castle Crashers. Not exactly. So it's a little bit more of a roguelite type game. Every time we play it, it's a little different. And, you know, you still have otherwise a very similar sort of couch multiplayer possibility, 1 to 4 players, local multiplayer works. And you play as one of several different characters. There are a few unlocks in the beginning and a lot more to unlock based on the completion of certain quests and achievements. And as you play as each of these characters, they have different attributes. What the individual stats mean, not real clear to me yet, but what it comes down to is you basically have fighters and casters. You've got characters that are going to be a little more rough and tumble and characters that are better with ranged spell weapons and things. And as you fight and take down these you know, goblins and other enemies, they'll drop weapons. You can swap out what you're carrying for that weapon, and you actually have 2 different equipment slots and can switch across different weapons as well and different items. So nice. You can take on different ranged attacks versus close attacks and stuff of that nature. And like I said, each time is a little different. The map layout, it actually kind of reminds me a little bit of, this is not exactly like apples to apples, but it kind of reminds me of Binding of Isaac, how you'll have sort of a rectangular, room, and there will be exit portals or doors on at least 2 of them. I didn't run any dead ends when I played. And, the room layout may be upset by like the presence of boulders and other impassable objects or gaps or holes in the ground. So not a hugely varied terrain, but everywhere is a little bit different. And you know, you might have there's like a farm you come by and you have to squash bugs for the farmer, or there might be a pet to escort it hiding in the trees. Something like that. These little side quests that come up occasionally.
Escort missions, no.
Yeah. And as you just fight through, eventually you get to boss fights. And it can get pretty difficult. It's very challenging. It's very intense at times. A lot of chaos going on, especially as you add players. My kids, you know, tested this out with me, and I think they had a pretty rough time with it, actually.
a bit too intense for them?
Yeah. It is a little hard. It's a little unforgiving. That's kind of a typical thing with a lot of roguelites is the difficulty's up a notch or 2.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they play Castle Crashers with me all the time, so, you know, they saw the initial appeal. But I have to warn it certainly isn't like Castle Crashers, so that was my erroneous expectation. That's not really what this is.
That'll fucking teach you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, what happens when you make an assumption? Makes an ass out of 2 people, you an umption. So. That's what happened, man.
Never heard that one before. I heard the you and me. I never heard the you and umption.
That's a Samuel L. Jackson favorite, man.
That's a I don't know how I missed that then. I fucking love that. That is fantastic.
Yep. Long Kiss Goodnight. Good movie. Watch it. Yes. Anyway, it's a lot harder than I thought it would be. And one of the things that made it so hard, to be frank, is the with Castle Crashers. There are a couple things that you have that are a little different. And I'm just using that as a basis of comparison because, you know, lots of enemy mobs, multiple players on the screen. You keep mashing the buttons to keep punching enemies or, you know, hitting them with weapons or what have you. You don't really have that sort of like pain interruption thing. When you hit an enemy, the idea is they're not going to be able to hit back as long as you continue to combo on them and, you know, a typical beat 'em up. You don't really have that here. You start to smack them a couple times and they'll start smacking you back.
Yeah.
So you've got to stick and move a lot, but there isn't really any sort of visible impact as you hit them. They don't fall back. You don't really fall back. It just sort of interrupts your attacks. Mm-hmm. So it's like that's something I think needs a little polish. If you ask me.
I'm guessing the microphone weather? Picked that up, didn't it?
Yes. Holy smokes.
That was thunder. Oh, God. So before the power go, I hate cutting this one super short, but we do have another game. 20 yes. bucks on this one. What do you think of it?
Oh, 20 bucks. Well, I mean, bring your friends, but it's kind of a try it. I personally don't think I could see myself spending 20 bucks on it, but with a little more refinement, it could definitely earn that price. I mean, there's a lot of game there. There's a lot to play, so it's not all bad. It's just, for me, it's a little hard to enjoy with my kids, so they would probably be the other players I'd have join me right now for a game like that, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it definitely falls into the try range. It's cute, it's fun, and it's deceptively challenging.
Nice. And it did just launch out of early access, so I'm sure they're going to be, you know, tidying things up and making things smoother as the weeks progress as well.
Right.
But you got one other game before I blow away due to a possible tornado, and that is called Puss, developed and published by Team Coil, releasing June 6th on Steam for $6.66, so it's coming out $6.66 for $6.66. In this game, you play as a cat that's trapped in another dimension. Find the way out or stay there forever. Absurd, insane, and intense avoid-em-up game about a cat. Royal, I have a feeling this isn't just a standard game, is it? give us the preview deets on this one.
I can't hold in my laughter as you even describing it. It's amazing. it's more like a vaporwave VHS fever dream with a cat. Okay, that's the best way I can describe this thing. So you start it out and you're in the middle of this like bar in very solarized bright neon colors, says bonjour, and you drag this kitty face across and it takes you to the first level. The first level is different every time. It changes up which level to load for you, and there's a few based on varying difficulties. Each level is basically a path from a start point to a finish point, and the finish point is getting there. It gets progressively harder because the game is it has a very glitchy look to it, and these glitches are actually things that will try to get you, whether it's projectiles that fly across the screen, or the path suddenly turns off, or gets smaller, or disappears altogether, or sometimes there are these converging mirror images. I mean, it's just psychotic. I can't describe it. It's absolutely psychedelic. And so, as you proceed through this, it's kind of like a game of Operation. You don't touch the sides or you lose. And instead of a buzzer, it's more like the tape starts to get eaten. So it has this sort of grainy VHS aesthetic, and it turns into just noisy, garbly static.
I do want to say, in case my mic is picking up any clicking right now, we have about grape-sized hail outside.
I was gonna say, it sounds like a hailstorm over there, man. Oh man, I gotta wrap this up.
I might die. If this episode doesn't go up, I'm sorry that this call was for nothing.
I'll pour one out for you, man.
This game looks absolutely batshit insane. I love it when a game comes out, kind of, it has the facade of, oh, it's this cutesy little, you know, innocent game. And then when you sit down and play it, it's like, this is a fucked up, crazy, fucked up game.
Yes. If you have watched Ring or The Ring or anything that has that sort of like glitch aesthetic horror, this game will appeal to you because as you get further into it, it gets creepy as hell. Super, super creepy. Not really something I was quite expecting. I knew it was going to be a little psychedelic, but it goes just straight up like video nasty. I'm expecting something to come out of my monitor and eat me. I mean, it's fucking scary.
It goes the horror route, not just the crazy route.
I'm sorry to spoil a little bit of that, but if you actually look at the store page, you'll already see, you know, there's like Baphomet over the cat, which I think alludes to the $6.66 pricing and the $6.66 release date. Yeah, no, there's definitely some sort of like satanic backmasking type thing going on in the aesthetic that you pick up as you play. And I don't want to spoil the surprises, but it's hilarious and it will shock and scare you. It's awesome.
With cats.
With cats.
Yes.
Yes. With cat cuteness. I don't know how to better describe it than that.
Nice. So again, this is just a preview. We haven't played the full game. Hopefully we'll get to cover that either later on this month or early in June. But for $6.66 right now, what are your thoughts on this? Does this seem like something to keep an eye on?
Yes, definitely keep an eye on it. Even if you think the idea of like an avoid 'em up is not really your cup of tea, it's an experience, and I think $6.66 is going to be a very worthy price of admission for it. Definitely.
Nice. Sounds awesome. Well, that is it for this episode. Possibly for every episode. We never know. depends on whether or not this tornado warning actually comes to fruition for me.
Yeah.
Using big words like fruition. That's how I know the end is not.
Duck and cover, man.
Well, thanks again to everyone who was on this episode chatting with me. Royal, thanks to you for coming on here and sharing my final moments with me. Do you have any final words to wrap up this episode?
Meow.